I made it.
Were you worried? Did you think you weren't going to make today's show?
I was squealing the wheels.
I heard some squeal wheels. I heard them. Hi, guys. It's Bill. It's Wendy. Wendy made it to the show. It's Wednesday. Should be a pretty good show. We're going to talk about a huge animation auction that's coming up. That's at 10:35. Dane Neal will be by to talk about the history of a food that you and I are perplexed by, your pumpkin spice, which everybody in the world seems to love but us.
I like pumpkin pie. You don't even like that.
No.
Is it bad pumpkin spice?
It's everywhere, Steve.
It's in dog food.
It's in the deodorant I'm wearing.
I'll say the world. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
That's the dumbest expression
I've
ever everywhere.
Heard. So you don't get it. I don't get it. Dane Neal will do his best to sit us down and talk to us in gentle tones about why this is the flavor of the century.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
I don't understand it
pumpkin
at all.
Pie's been around since the Pilgrims.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, do you think the Pilgrims had pumpkin spice aftershave?
No. Not the
pumpkin spice coffee flavoring?
No. No. You made today's show and tell day.
I know.
How did that happen? How did this come to be?
I went to a painting party last night. They offer them at various places. It's Bottle and Bottega. I had to look up what Bottega meant. Does anybody know what that means?
Mm-mm.
Bottega?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a Bottle and Bottega. I just saw one.
You saw Bottega, like, but you don't know what it is?
I thought I did, but I was thinking Bodega.
Oh.
I was thinking Lou Bega.
Mambo number five,
yes.
That guy?
It is the studio or workshop of a major artist in which other artists may participate in the execution of the projects or commissions of the major artist.
Now it all makes sense.
Well, they have 9 Chicagoland locations, LaGrange, Glen Ellen.
I walked by the one in Highland Park over the weekend.
Park Ridge. Yeah, Evanston. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
And a local bar in LaGrange, the Barrel House Social, had a painting party, and I signed up because I love to paint.
Yes.
And
you're painting pictures or are you painting things?
You're painting a canvas, and you are given a little tiny picture, and then you have an instructor. Ours was Lynn, and she went through and she said, here's, you know, put this color here. But everyone's looked a little different by the end of the night.
So everyone gets the same picture to recreate.
Yes.
All right, that's fair.
And she helps us, like, you know, we did a autumnal tree print, I guess, that we painted.
Uh-huh.
And fruit?
No, I only did this once before, and I have a lovely bowl of pears and apples that I did one time.
And where is that displayed?
That's in our front room.
Oh, you have it up
yeah.
for the world to see. Good for you.
Yeah, although my very first foray into this, my paint was dried out and my brush was very dried out. So when I went to put my signature on my very first one, it looks like crap. And it really bugs me.
Oh.
And I really want to paint over it and do my signature
again. I was going to ask, though, aren't you drinking throughout this thing?
So
there is that.
Well, that's Bottle.
Does your aim change as the...
My painting got better.
Did it?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of your more famous painters, though, also enjoyed some Ernest and Julio Gallo while creating their artworks.
I had a couple of Corona.
Did you have a few Coronas? Anytime they make a movie or write a book about one of your greatest artists, there's always a side story that they like to drink a little bit.
I think his nickname was Vincent Van Mojito.
Right. It was. Well, all right. So you did one a while ago, a year ago, a couple
Maybe
of years ago?
2 to 3 years
ago. All right.
Ago.
And that one's on display in your house. And now this is your second choice, your second chance.
Yes. And I actually let it dry completely. And then I used a Sharpie for the signature on it. And
all
it looks much better. And I wanted to show it to you, and we can put it on our website.
All right. I'm anxious to see it.
So I brought it in.
Can you warn me first and tell me what I'm about to see?
Yes. I'm going to show you the little tiny picture that we were supposed to recreate.
Uh-huh.
It's an autumnal picture.
Stunning.
Of trees with reds and oranges and yellows and a little stream and a tree.
That's beautiful. You did that?
No, that's a tiny little postcard size.
This is what you had to recreate.
This is the one I did.
All right, I have to say, honestly, because I was ready for this to look nothing like the picture you just showed me, yours is as good, if not better.
Thank you. I did not put the upper trees on it. But,
can you see it, Steve?
Yeah, very bold colors.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's very nice.
I will put it, if you're looking on our stream, or we'll put it on the website. I'm very proud of it.
Wendy, if Bob Ross were here, he would be weeping right now.
Kiss me.
He would kiss you and then start to cry.
And then
maybe the other order. I don't know the order, but I know he would do both of those things.
But I did this.
That's really pretty good.
So,
thank you.
So you just sat down with no skills whatsoever and did that?
Well, I have taken art classes in the past, and I'm pretty creative.
Yeah.
I like to make jewelry and goofy things.
Yeah.
I've painted our house. Not the exterior, but that's a little different than painting a lovely thing.
It's way different. How many people were in your class?
Only
last
six
night?
Last night.
Whose was was somebody's by far the best and somebody's by far the worst, and where do you rank among those six?
I don't really want to say it, but mine was completely the best.
Was yours the best? Good. No, that's fine. And the person who couldn't quite do the best, number six, what was wrong with theirs, would you say?
If you've never painted before, I imagine it would be kind of difficult to smooth things out and fade things.
Yeah.
And it just looked it looked kind of cool.
Could
just,
you tell it was what
absolutely.
It is? You could,
but it was
tell.
A little more abstract, which in a way I kind of liked.
Yeah.
So are there lines when you get this?
No, it's just a white canvas.
White canvas.
No paint by number.
No.
No.
And then
darn.
You get a paper plate filled with all the different colors you will be using.
A palette.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
thank you for that, Mary.
A paper palette.
There was no thumb hole cut out in it, though. You know how
in
the old days.
Hole.
Did you have an easel?
I had a tabletop easel.
Wow.
Yeah.
And their next one, they are going to be painting a palette with the Chicago flag in the colors of the light blue and white and red.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have just in black the skyline of the city.
That's
so
pretty impressive.
I have to go to that class.
They've hooked you.
100%.
Wow.
It was so fun. I only had two beers because I was really trying to focus.
Right.
But it's fun. And Bottle and Bottega, not a paid sponsor. I paid for my ticket. I think it was $31.
I was going to ask, it's $30?
Yeah. And it included one free drink and all the
That's
supplies, and you get to bring it home. And it was super fun. And I was home in 2 hours.
What criticism did the instructor give you upon seeing your completed work?
There was only one criticism I had. There's a main tree in the forefront that is yellow.
Yeah.
And there's a little grassy knoll that the tree is on. And she told me, you put a little yellow down there so it looked like some leaves had fallen.
That's good advice.
And it was perfect
Solid
advice.
Solid advice.
But it was so fun. I think everybody should do this. And you can have private parties. You know how we here have these little...
team building exercises?
Yes. Yeah. I guess that's what they're called.
Yeah.
I think it's just playtime.
Right. But they're always like once a month or so, sometimes more, sometimes less.
Yeah.
The opportunity.
Yes.
Yeah, it's recess.
WGN recess.
I did one of those, but I did a wood paint on wood.
Ooh.
It's like a wood, you know, it was at my girlfriend's house. So she provided the drinks, and the lady came in, and we did a wood stencil sign, you know, with like the old type of wood, and you could pick,
know,
antique wood, and it's hanging in my front porch.
See?
Really cool. I liked it. And
when people see it, Mary, do they know, like, you must tell them that you, like, what's the reaction from people who come by the house?
Wow, you did that?
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, because they know I cannot paint worth a darn. So
it's pretty easy. I mean, you think at first, you know, I can't do it. But if you follow along and you, like she at one point just said, dab the brush because you're trying to make it look like leaves. You don't want just smooth edges.
Right.
As soon as she said that, people were really getting the hang of it. And the only thing you draw on there on this white canvas, Steve, is a pencil line to kind of determine where the horizon's going to be. And she did tell us go not quite half, a little lower than half.
And then you paint over that.
Yeah, and that's
Nobody
really
that.
All we did. And maybe the tree in the forefront. But once you painted, there was no pencil mark there anymore.
That's really good.
I want to do this once a month.
We should hang your paintings up in the studio here and make it an art gallery.
It'd be a good radio show.
Yeah.
You could have people in.
Yeah.
Paint
I'm going to be
pictures.
The new Bob Ross.
Right.
Since I can't be the white Oprah, I'm going to be the non-Afro
Bob Ross.
Just go for the living Bob Ross.
All right. That's
better.
That's easier.
That's way easier.
But we'll put a picture up on Facebook. I am just very proud.
You should be. That's
used
really,
a little Sharpie.
That's very good.
And the big thing is I came home last night and the kids are like, are you finished? Let me see. And they both kind of wowed.
Yeah.
You did that?
It's understandable.
And once you gain the respect of your kids, even for like 1 minute, that means everything in the world.
That's a big success. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Hey, I have something I need to tell everybody. Brooklyn and Sheetz have been named the winner of the best of online betting in a category created by Good Housekeeping. They've got rave reviews, not only from me, but from Business Insider. Imagine that incredible feeling you get from fancy hotel sheets. Well, husband and wife Rich and Vicky Fulop didn't think it should be so difficult or expensive to get sheets like that at home. Luxury sheets without the luxury markup. Brooklinen takes the middleman out and works directly with you, the customer, from design to manufacturing to customer service, and even beyond that, sheets that don't just feel great, they look great, too. Our Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets we've ever slept on. I love sleeping on them. It feels like I'm on a cloud. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for our listeners. You get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code Bill at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident they're going to offer you a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. But the only way to get your $20 off and free shipping is to use the promo code Bill at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen, B-R-O-O-K-L-I-N-E-N.com. And that promo code again is Bill. It's Bill. It's Wendy. Wendy has created a work of art, which can be seen very soon on our Facebook page. She took a class last night at Bottle and Bottega. Am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, she's got a work of art right in front of her. Do you remember in TV Guide or TV Preview, if you didn't want to spend the dollar and a quarter,
which we didn't,
TV Preview in your Sun Times, every week there'd be a picture of a deer. This is usually in the like page 17 or 18. It'd be a picture of the deer, and it would say, "Can you draw Spunky?" And then you would draw it, and you would send it
yes,
in.
Yes, I did that several times.
And they would tell you
times.
That you've got incredible talent and need to take some classes immediately.
Right, and they try to enroll you in some really expensive art school.
Right.
But not like the Art Institute of Chicago.
No.
It was like Pete's Art Cabin.
Right. Right. So everybody would go, I must be good. They, you know, they looked at my painting. These are professional artists that looked at my painting of Spunky the Deer, and they said, yeah, you could be in this. You're great at drawing.
I did have an art class when I went to ISU for half a year, and that is pretty much the only class I went to.
Oh.
So I guess I like art.
And would models come in and just stand around and you'd have to sketch them? Was it that kind of class?
I never did a nude.
You want to say that backwards?
Go ahead. Nick DiGilio, grab it if you want. I don't care. You can take that.
Yeah, I think you made that even worse right there. Is what you did right there has made it worse. All right.
I never sketched a nude person.
Nobody was naked during the process of your artwork. All right. Well, that's good news.
People would be hard to draw. They would.
Yeah.
Nature is pretty easy. It's Why did I? That wasn't dirty.
No, I think that's true.
No,
I
wasn't
think
at
that's
all.
Absolutely true.
Right. I don't know what Bill was thinking.
My mom's friend, this is years and years ago, took a class where they taught her. This was an art class. She always thought, it's something I want to do. I got to give it a shot. So she started taking an art class. And what they taught her was to not look at the subject that you're painting and look at your work, to just look at the thing you're painting and just let your hand guide itself. And she'd come in with these drawings that were just spectacular. And then she'd try to teach my mom and my brother and my dad. She'd try to teach us to do that, and we were horrible at it. Like, you couldn't even tell what we were trying to draw. But all of hers, you know, looked fantastic.
Well, it's weird. And last night, my son Michael, who's a really good musician, says, "How come I'm not artistic?" And I said, "We all have our specialties."
Yeah. Yeah.
I want so bad to be in a band, and I never will be.
You don't know that.
No, I'm getting too old.
No.
Who wants to, you know, it's going to be like that Hallmark card lady leading a band. Who wants to see that?
There might be a market for that.
Come on.
There could be a market.
Don't break a hip.
But you're right. Some people just have this innate ability to just recreate things by drawing it or painting it. I don't know how you do it. That's amazing.
I pride myself on really great penmanship. I wanted to go into graphic design for a little while.
Yeah.
And then I thought, yeah, I can't talk as much as I want to, so radio's better.
But
you, sir, should be a doctor because your handiwork is illegible.
Well, my handwriting
is
awful. Yeah, I should be, based on that, I could be a doctor, right. Yeah.
All right. How do we set you up?
That's easy.
Dr. Love.
I'll look in the TV Guide for a medical course that I can take.
A word search with medical terms?
Yeah.
That should sign you up.
Yeah. Send in my $5 and see if Johns Hopkins is interested in me.
It'll be changed to Bill's Hopkins pretty soon.
I'm pretty sure it will. I'm positive it will. All right. Here's the game plan, everybody. We'll take a little break. We'll get you some news. Steve will give you the news. And then after the news, a giant animation auction is coming up.
I'm surprised you're into this at all.
Oh.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
I know.
This is.
I almost wish I didn't know about this because this could be a very expensive day for me.
And I'm surprised you're sharing with the listeners because you wanted to hog all the details for yourself.
All right, we got to change. All right. We got to change plans.
All right, we'll do that. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Hi, may I take your order, please?
Big Mac McDLT, a quarter pounder with some cheese filet, a fish, a hamburger, a cheeseburger, a Happy Meal, McNuggets, tasty golden french fries, regular and larger sizes, salad, shepherd garden, or a chicken salad, oriental, big breakfast, egg McMuffin, hot hot cakes and sausages, maybe biscuits, bacon, egg and cheese and sausage, Danish hash brown, 2 and 4 dessert, hot apple pies and sundaes, 3 varieties of sauce, corn, the kinds of shakes and chocolate, chip cookies, and to drink a Coca-Cola, Diet Coke, and orange drink, it's riding coffee, decaf, 2 a loaf, and milk, also an orange juice, I love McDonald's, but then great taste, and I get this all at one place.
Would you like that to go?
Darn it, I forgot this. I used to be able to do this.
The whole song? You
yeah.
can't do it anymore? What happened to you? You used to know every word
to
this.
I've eaten too much McDonald's in my time. We are going to talk about a very cool thing that's going on that you can actually go visit.
Yeah.
Bill, you have been in heaven.
I'm drooling. I mean, it's embarrassing. Jim Lentz is here, the director of animation art for Heritage Auctions. They're having a giant Art of Ronald McDonald and Friends, the Setmakers Collection auction. I want to make sure I get the dates right. It's this weekend, right? It's September 22nd and the 23rd, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Jim, let's talk about some of the items that you've brought in first, and then we'll cover the ones that you haven't brought in. But I am in awe of what I'm looking at here in the studio.
Is that a
right
gift
now.
For you, Bill?
Yes, it is, right, Jim?
Well, you know, we were sitting there. We have about... over 200 items on display over on Ohio Street for people to come in Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And we got in this morning, and I'm like, okay, what can we bring to Bill and Wendy that would be wow? And my favorite piece in the auction is the original prototype for the tabletop in McDonaldland that you would sit around, the little kid, and it's the Hamburglar. And it's in our window right on Ohio Street, and we actually put a static cling of, like, broken glass like he's breaking out. But everybody loves the Hamburglar. So we brought the Hamburglar. We brought a little filet of fish who's adorable that was part of the Ronald McDonald McDonaldland playground. Mm-hmm. And for those people who don't remember this, Captain Crook was always looking for filet of fish.
Yes.
So we brought in his, he never got them. They always seemed to swim away, but we brought in a prototype of filet of fish. We brought in, now the Hamburglar always wanted to steal hamburgers from where?
From McDonald's.
From the Hamburger Patch.
Oh, well, sure.
Oh, that's
yeah, of course.
Right.
In
yeah.
McDonaldland.
Yes.
So we brought a hamburger from the Hamburger Patch that was a prototype to make a desk lamp. It's the only one that ever exists. It was a prototype that set makers made back in the 1970s and pitched it.
And why didn't anybody pick that up? Because, I'm sorry, kids love McDonald's and love McDonald's burgers.
Well,
they could do their homework with that.
Setmakers was the company. They did the set for the very first McDonaldland commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they came up with the idea to take these beloved characters. And, you know, Ronald McDonald, they say, is the smile that was known around the world. But McDonaldland, you had... the Hamburglar, and who was going to catch the Hamburglar? You had Officer Big Mac.
Yeah.
And McDonaldland has to have government, so we had Mayor
McCheese.
Yep.
Right. Who I hear may run for mayor of Chicago.
You know what? I think he might. Everyone else is. He ought to throw his hat in. You had Grimace. Grimace, who loved his thick shakes. And
what's the deal with Grimace?
Okay, do you know where the thick shakes come from?
Well, the original McDonald brothers were big purveyors of milkshakes. So,
but do you know where Grimace's milkshakes came from?
I don't.
The milkshake patch?
No. Milkshake volcanoes.
Milkshake volcanoes.
That's right.
So that's why he looks like that?
Well, he was a villain at first. He had two sets of arms, and then they made him lovable purple Grimace, and he has his thick shakes. And sometimes the shakes are brought to him by the goblins.
Yes.
And if the goblins are in the room, the saying is, keep an eye on your fries, because they loved fries. And as Bill said, he knew right away. He goes, the goblins, weren't they the fry guys? I'm like, yes, they were.
They changed the names.
They did change
the
names.
Do you remember for a while the Grimace's uncle appeared in McDonaldland? Do you remember who his uncle was?
Was this the
Bill?
St. Patrick's Day reference?
Uncle of Grimacy. Yeah.
That's right. For Shamrock Shakes.
He would do Shamrock Shakes, right, at St. Patrick's Day. Yep.
So this set makers, after they did this commercial, comes up with this idea of let's create a McDonaldland in the form of a playground. And in 1971, the very first playground was in Chula Vista, California.
Yeah.
And business went through the ceiling.
Really?
And they... this. it became a major undertaking to build these playgrounds, not only in America, but we have artwork for McDonaldland playgrounds in this auction from Germany, Hong Kong, Japan, Texas, Michigan, Chicago, New York. And the McDonaldland characters became so popular, they started to make Ronald rooms inside McDonald's stores.
To have birthday parties and things.
Exactly. Yeah, and they were all themed out. They were huge murals. And the mural was always themed like, you know, a Midwest Ronald was milking a cow. The mural in New York City, he was on a tugboat going past the Statue of Liberty. We brought a Michigan one with us today where they're all playing sports. And the artwork was done by a guy at the time nobody ever heard of. His name was Wes Cook. Wes Cook went on to become one of the most famous Disney Imagineer artists for theme parks.
Yeah.
He had a one-man show in Laguna Beach Museum of Art. And the very first time I looked at this collection, I saw this little signature, Wes Cook, and I looked at the Dwayne Ament from Setmakers, and I said, that's Wes Cook. He says, oh, have you heard of him?
Yeah.
And we have over 100 pieces of artwork from this very famous theme park artist, all of that quality that I brought to show you in this sale that'll knock your socks off.
And listeners, you can go see this. It's on display starting today.
Today, 11 o'clock till 8 o'clock tonight. And 10 to 5 Thursday and Friday.
It's Heritage Auctions, Chicago, Illinois, right downtown, 215 West Ohio Street, Suite 1W. It's on display. And now, can you bid on things? How does that work?
You can bid on. You don't have to go to the auction. You can go to ha.com, and you can watch the auction and bid live. You can put your, if you're busy Saturday, you can put your max bid in. You can come see us. You can put your bid in, or you can bid live online. You can even bid on your iPhone, believe it or not.
I believe it.
You know, we have
made
people,
it very easy.
It's funny. I remember going to my first Heritage auction, and I used to be in the 90s. You'd sit in the room, and you wouldn't want to move your hands because you thought you did. And now you go to these auctions, and there's like a little screen, and they go $500 to the room, $500 to the phone.
Yeah.
And then they go, HA Live, would you like to join in? And the very first auction I went to, there was a bid from someone who was a block away, and the next bid was Alabama. We went to Baltimore, and in rapid succession, we went India, Germany, South America, winning bid England. It's a brave new world out there.
Everybody wants this. Anywhere on the globe, people want these collectibles.
Well, you know, I tell people, you know, McDonald's, you know, these characters, I'm a father of four,
mm-hmm.
Lived 15 years up in Kildare, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going to McDonald's back then was like, you know, first of all, as a mom and dad, okay, time out. It's like date night. You can go, the kids
it was
go
a
the
special
playground.
Occasion.
And you could, you know, I'm talking to the missus as the kids are on the playground. You know, I got 20 minutes here, you know. This is great.
So McDonald's at some point, and it would have to be right around 1970, 71, 72, realized that not only do you have to produce food, but you have to get kids in the mindset that they were really taking a little mini vacation.
Exactly.
So they came up with all these characters. They invented the Happy Meal, which was genius, because then kids aren't just getting food, they're getting a toy. They did everything right, kind of, didn't they, from a marketing standpoint?
Absolutely. The Set Makers, the company that made all this, the gentleman who was the president just called me up one day and said, I got a couple drawings I'd like you to take a look at.
Yeah.
And I saw the name Wes Cook on the email. And this is a very funny story. I get his address. He's in California. And there's two long driveways. And I don't know which house is his.
Yeah.
And I go, everybody goes left in the movie theater. I'm going to go right. So I walk up this long looping driveway because I couldn't see the house from the street. And as I get to the front door, there are three life-size Ronald McDonalds waving as I got to the front door. And I'm like, okay.
This is it.
I'm in the right place. And then when I came in the house, this was on the coffee table, this Hamburglar.
Nice.
That I'm sure that they'll figure out how to show you people out there in Radioland.
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked at him and I said, how much stuff do you have? And we walked out to a garage and we walked out to a storage unit. And I said, he goes, I just saved everything.
Wow.
He goes, you think anybody wants this?
Maybe.
And then the really nice thing was he decided he wanted to give a portion of the proceeds to Ronald McDonald House Charity. So there's a nice philanthropical element to this sale. So we feel good about that. So there's a nice page in the auction catalog that actually has the history of Ronald McDonald House Charities in there so people can be aware of their efforts here in Chicago. So this is great.
That's great.
I'm thinking we took the kids to Hawaii. Granted, they were very little. They liked the beaches. They liked the sugarcane train, but we went to Whaler's Village, and there's a Ronald McDonald sitting there on a bench with his arm out so you can sit and take a picture.
Set makers made that.
Kanapali Beach. That's Absolutely. What my kids loved the most about Hawaii.
Well, at that McDonald's, there was a mural inside of all of the characters snorkeling. We have the artwork for that. The mural that was made for Oahu was Ronald water skiing with all the characters surfing and doing beach activities. We have that artwork in the sale as well.
Beautiful stuff. Jim Lentz is here. He's director of animation art for Heritage Auctions. The website you want to visit, excuse me, is comics.ha.com. That's for Heritage Auctions. Again, it's comics.ha.com. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Phil Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest in studio is Jim Lentz. He's the director of animation art for Heritage Auctions. There's a giant animation and McDonald's auction going on this weekend, September 22nd and 23rd. I said comics.ha.com, Heritage Auctions. You can just go to ha.com, Jim. That'll get it done.
ha.com will get you right there.
Earlier, you told us that this prototype of the Hamburglar, which stands to be maybe about 2.5-3 feet tall. Would you say 2.5 feet tall? Made in 1971.
In the 70s, yes.
Part of a series of McDonaldland characters. They did everybody, all the major characters.
Yes.
Right? You said that this is one of your favorite pieces. What do you expect will be the public's favorite piece or most expensive piece?
Well, I think the very first Ronald McDonald Land statue of Ronald waving. It's the very, very first one. We actually have the prototype mold. You'll see it in the catalogs that we left you. But the very first Ronald McDonald, I think, is going to attract quite a lot of attention. We also have a complete set of 3D wall plaques of all the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to attract a lot of attention. We have some prototypes of things that never, ever went into manufacture, one being what we brought you today, the hamburger lamp. We have the most adorable Ronald McDonald high chair that only one was made, and the catalog has pictures of it being manufactured by hand and hand-painted. It never got mass-produced. It was just a prototype. So for our hardcore collectors, there are these prototypes. We also have, I think it's one of your favorites, Bill, we have two original goblins that were television props for the very first McDonaldland commercial.
Nice.
That's
and
so cool.
And it's just these mop-top, handmade-like puppets, but it's from the very first McDonaldland commercial.
And Bill King is here with us, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't want, you know.
Oh, yeah,
I wanted
the confusion
to give,
over
right.
our name. You can kind of guess it to what some of these will sell for, but realistically, it's nothing but a guess because you know you have no
idea. Well, here's
the
great thing about this auction. There's
what do you have for under $20?
A lot, actually.
Really?
There's over 300 lots. The entire auction is no reserve. Everything starts at $1.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody says, well, what if it goes for $1? Well, then it goes for $1.
Right.
I mean, we actually put this auction together to have something in every category. There's an awful lot of small, original, one-of-a-kind drawings. There's something in every price range. I think you can get something for $50 to $100. I think you're going to get some pieces that go $5,000, $10,000. But it's definitely everybody's pocketbook could get something in this auction.
Is there a famous collector or a couple collectors that you go, oh, this guy, he's going to swoop in, he's going to take all the best stuff? Is there a chance
there
of that?
There usually is, but you know, this is the first McDonald's commercial we've done. So one of the real fun thing was when we sit down to say, you know, if I do an animation sale, I know who buys Disney animation, I know who buys The Grinch, I know who buys Charlie Brown, I know who buys Bugs Bunny, I know who buys The Simpsons. When we sat down to do this, one of the big questions at our end at Heritage Auctions was, okay, who gets the catalog on this? It's not exactly an animation auction. It's Americana. It's pop culture. So one of the great things about us is we have a million registered bidders in 184 countries with a very strong email drop list. We do a very strong Facebook, Instagram program.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to our website at ha.com, there is two videos up. One of the videos is the very first McDonaldland commercial. And the second part of the video shows all of this being made. It's a 1970s industrial film from set makers. And then there's another video at ha.com that's not me talking about the highlights. It's like 30 things in 60 seconds that's fun.
Yeah.
So this is an auction that, I mean, right now cars are stopping on Ohio Street because all the big statues are in the window,
mm-hmm.
and there's a red light right there. And
people
are
perfect.
Like, you know, that's why people really have to come down because we've got a lot of this is on display, and it's free today till 8 and 5 o'clock Thursday and Friday, 215 Ohio Street. But I really think there's something in every budget. I don't
Bill,
think
you cannot leave early today.
I can't leave early.
He keeps
there's
looking
no
at
way.
Me.
We're there
until
8 o'clock tonight.
Oh, I got to go. I have to see this stuff.
There's a cocktail party Thursday night. Feels free
with
to come
Shamrock
down.
Shakes?
Yeah.
Spiked Shamrock Shakes.
Absolutely.
Who was the model of Ronald McDonald? Where did that begin?
Well, there's a whole big Wikipedia website on the birth of Ronald McDonald. You know, Willard Scott, some say, was the first costume.
What about Vito Scotti? That's a name I always hear, played the first Ronald McDonald.
And there's a lot of people, because first he was a live clown.
Yeah.
Ronald McDonald,
show up at restaurants for grand openings and stuff.
That's exactly how he started.
Yeah.
And it kind of emerged from that costume character that would go to grand openings, emerged into the first 1971 commercial, and they invented people to come along with him, and that's where we got McDonald Land, because it was a McDonald Land playground.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald McDonald's McDonald Land playground, and then the characters just took birth. I mean, they're just, you know, everybody knows, you know, you got Klutzy, Officer Big Mac, and mm-hmm. Mayor McCheese, and Grimace. And
what about that professor?
I was going to say, there's the professor.
Yeah.
Do you need extra help, Bill?
I
would like
out.
To work
could,
with
I
you.
Work with
you know, I needed you to write this catalog, Bill. I'm very impressed with you. Everybody always says, what did the professor do? Well, he invented anything and everything in McDonaldland.
Yeah.
Exactly what? We don't know what. But he could fix it or invent it. And he always, you know, he had his beard, and he always had his little shop coat on, and we actually have some really nice professor things.
Oh,
any little McNugget things?
Well, we have the fillet of fish, and we have the goblins. So, you know,
because this is contemporary, the little nuggets.
Well, you know, and where does McDonald's hot apple pies come from, Bill?
I don't know the answer to that.
Apple pie trees.
Apple pie trees.
In McDonald's land. And we have hand-painted wood prototypes that are about 4 foot high of all the apple pie trees in McDonald land. And they look great in the display on Ohio Street. I mean, they're amazing.
Has the concept of what Ronald and the characters look like changed dramatically from the first drafts till today?
Yes.
Have they?
Yeah. Like I said, Grimace originally had two arms and was a villain.
Yeah.
And now he's this lovable, shake-eating Grimace.
Yeah.
You know, part of the fun of this was when we were putting this catalog together, and all of this was in our warehouse. We have a lot of young employees at Heritage Auctions. You know, we've got 40 different categories. We do movie posters, we do sports, we do comic books, we do coins, mm-hmm. fine art, photography, designer handbags. Drives me crazy. A designer handbag comes in a bag, a black and white Birkin, one of the rarest. How do I know this? But all of these young people in my office kept walking over going, we selling that? This is cool. This is cool. And we had this one big hand-painted mural that had the thick shake volcanoes, and it had the McDonald Land train on a trestle, and it had all these like back parts, and there was a castle. And my partner in crime, who's sitting next to me today, Bill King, goes, well, you know whose castle that is? I go, that I don't know. That's Grimace's castle. How could you not know that?
Embarrassing, Jim. I can't believe you don't know that.
But I do now.
I have to ask real quick. They made a movie about Ray Kroc a couple
the
years
founder?
Ago. The founder.
The founder.
What did you think of that?
I'm a big Michael Keaton fan.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved the movie.
Yeah.
My only constructive criticism was, you know, Ray Kroc, I don't think we have McDonald's if it wasn't for his drive and push and pushing the boundaries. But I thought they made him like the Antichrist with about 4 minutes to go in the movie.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, he went from this, okay, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that I think is a great businessman, and I have a lot of friends that worked in the early days at McDonald's and speak so highly of
him.
But I thought the end of the movie, they just kind of like really villainized him.
Big time.
With 2 minutes to go.
So, he kind of took advantage of the original McDonald's brothers, or the movie paints that picture anyway.
It paints that picture.
Yeah,
and that's their side of the picture. I had in another life, I worked for a company called Speedy Muffler King, and one of my real estate guys was a guy named Eddie Daly, and he was one of the first real estate guys, and he came up with the idea to do a McDonald's in a city, the first in a city, no parking lot. They'd never done that before, and it was in downtown Boston. And he told me the story that Ray Kroc had flown in. He said, I think we can put a McDonald's right here. And he's like, no parking lot, no this, no that. And Ray Kroc was so impressed with what he did And this is the story he told me. He said, I can't give you the shirt off my back. He says, but he says, I'm giving you my sports jacket. Oh. And he said he had 14-carat RK buttons on the sports jacket. And he goes, so he goes, I got that going for me.
Why does McDonald's have the best fries? Because they do.
I'm just like you. I just eat them.
Don't analyze
them. They are really the
just
best.
Enjoy There's
them.
Nothing better at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Anytime, really.
Jim, this auction looks amazing. Jim Lentz, the director of animation art over at Heritage Auctions. It's incredible stuff. If you like McDonald's, if you like McDonaldland, Ronald McDonald, it's all there. Early prototypes, something for everybody. Go to ha.com. That's Heritage Auctions, ha.com. You'll see all these great treats. Great to see you. Thank you so much.
You know, I used to own a business here in town and do this radio station all the time. It's been 30 years, so this is like coming home. But you have a much better view than I remember from 1990.
From the old days.
It's spectacular.
Pleasure
yeah,
to
it's
meet
better.
You.
Thanks, Bill,
guys.
Thank you for coming up, and thank you so much for coming up.
It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, and we get our biweekly visit. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, every other week.
It sounds like a medical procedure.
Dane right. Neal is here. Host
cough,
of Dane Neal
Wendy,
and Friends.
Cough. Administer Dane biweekly. Maybe he's not right for you if your doctor says no.
Right. What are the side effects to you, Dane? Do we know yet?
Well, they say if you experience blindness or potentially death, maybe
Stop
it's not right for
Dane
you.
Stop using Dane Neal. Stop using Dane Neal. Dane, here's the thing. Everybody in the world seems to love pumpkin spice flavored anything, scented anything. If it has pumpkin spice on it, the world goes crazy for it. But somehow Wendy and I are immune to this.
Bleck.
As Wendy said, bleck.
It's insidious. I mean, and I don't mean it in a bad way because, you know, I really don't have any strong feelings about it until I did a little bit of the research, did some digging here to kind of get to the bottom of this phenomenon because it is one of those things. Here's the thing is you've got something that has become so, it's $500 million in the marketplace now. Everything from, you know, Pringles to dog cologne has got the pumpkin spice thing.
Room sanitizers. I've seen those.
They have greenies for dogs, which are these fake green toothbrushes that they eat, and they have pumpkin spice greenies. That is
too much.
A travesty.
It's a travesty.
So we're projecting our wants and needs onto the canine community. Who knows? Have they ever spoken? It's not like you can have one of those ads like back when he was a wolf. You know, he enjoyed, you know, mixing all these different spices, none of which were pumpkin.
Right.
Right? And then enjoyed them. Well, we go all the way back to the 1700s as far as kind of pumpkin spice. And you look at the, you know, the ingredients, cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger, cloves, allspice, and things don't. There's pumpkin is like the missing ingredient in a lot of that stuff.
If the Spice Girls started today, wouldn't there be a pumpkin spice? Don't you think there would be?
I think this is a... I mean, have they done the commercial on the marketing side? Because there's just...
have the Spice Girls endorse pumpkin spice?
Well, there's no reason not to. I mean, right. I think many of them are not doing other things.
Right.
Probably.
All right. So can we pinpoint a time frame, like when this became
absolutely
a big deal?
100%. Yeah. And here's the part about it. I mentioned Insidious. The only thing is because when you think just a surface level, when did this... It feels like the pumpkins. I mean, the pilgrims back in the day with pumpkins, you know, in the Horn of Plenty. And in the Horn of Plenty somewhere, you could make out maybe a pumpkin spice latte cup, you know, or a Starbucks gift card or something in there. And that it's been around forever, right? And I think it plays off of kind of the nostalgia of whether it's fall, whether it's Thanksgiving, whether it's that time of year, the change of the seasons. It makes you feel like it's been around with us forever, but it hasn't.
But that's the thing, is most nostalgia is based on memories we had as children, and this right. didn't. This wasn't a thing when we were children.
This was not a thing. This wasn't even a thing of a thing. Now, here's, you're right, Norman Rockwell, right, you don't see any of it, but you expect, right, it feels like that's the kind of stuff. It came out in 2002. Starbucks was looking to try to create a beverage that would be, I'm doing the air quotes here, fall. They wanted to have a fall-flavored beverage, and they were looking at caramel. They were looking at a bunch of different things that they thought could kind of identify, give that feeling of fall. And pumpkin was way down on the
list.
Yeah,
because apples should be up at the top. That's what I think of
apples
when I think of fall.
Apples make sense. Caramel makes sense.
Caramel, orange flavored, cinnamon. You know, there were some other things that they thought kind of apples would have been great that kind of fit into that team photo. And the pumpkin spice thing was way down the line as far as that, because they had so much success. And you think about this when you think about the flavors and the smells, like gingerbread and peppermint.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It says Christmas, right?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what they were trying to do. But it was 2002 when they started. I didn't really get the thing out until 2004,
right? Which doesn't, I mean, it wasn't that, you know, it's a while ago, but we're not talking pilgrims.
Right,
here.
Right.
And then as of 2016, $500 million. But it wasn't until like 2012 or so where, you know, other companies like a McDonald's, you had so much of their stuff going on.
When you say $500 million, is that revenue that Starbucks is cashing in on, or is that the industry as a whole?
Well, the $500 million, I think, is just a lot of the pumpkin spice stuff that's happened on the maybe the beverage side. $350 yeah. million dollars is just Starbucks alone.
Yeah. Could they have copywritten this or copyrighted this? How did they handle this? Because if nobody was doing it and they were the first ones to really jump to the forefront of it, and then everybody did it, are they seeing any profit because of that?
You know, it's I don't.
You can't copyright a flavor like that, can you?
I don't think so, right? I mean, I think maybe if there was some kind of proprietary, you know, the 11 herbs and spices, and maybe they do have their own kind of flavor to it. And I think probably either defenders or fans of what it is they do would say theirs is the best. And so I'm sure they've got some way that they do it. But it's the kind of thing that's just become so, you know, everybody kind of jumps on the bandwagon. We all remember and talked about a couple of years, Sriracha, remember? And now,
first
it was kind of this exotic, exclusive, whoa, are you in on this whole Sriracha thing? And then now, of course, we've all got Sriracha hand cream, you know?
Every one of us does.
I like Cholula better, if you want to know the truth. As for my hot sauce.
I've never been, again, maybe I'm just a big, you know, kind of dark cloud, but I never like Sriracha that much. Yeah, I do like that chili. I do like that one better.
Yeah.
So you think about it, like, what are the reasons why people have become so attached to it? Part of it, and we joked a little bit that maybe scientists working to make it as, you know, the cigarette
people.
They make
it addictive? Do they make it addictive somehow?
Well, it doesn't work on me. It doesn't work on you, right? We've all tried it, right? And it just like, you know, the casino, I get it. It could be fun, but I don't find myself, you know, going back there all the time.
Yeah.
So I think it's just something that really kind of hits with people. Maybe. And what do you guys think? Is it something? And if you had to think, why do people like it? Not you guys, but
I love pumpkin pie. I really do. I could have that year round.
So why one and not the other?
I don't know what it is. It works. It makes me think Thanksgiving. It makes me think of being a kid. But I like it in just my pie. Anything else it doesn't taste right.
Well, and that's part of it, is the kind of the nostalgia, thinking back, the pumpkin, the pie, but as a dessert, and that's why this was way down on the team photo of, hey, this is going to be our super big hit, and it is by far the biggest thing Starbucks has done, was because, you know, pumpkin pie as a dessert, it never even cracks, like, the top five of, like, top desserts. You know, it's not chocolate cake, it's not apple pie, it isn't any of those things. And so part of it is, I think, the nostalgia. Part of it is the limited time kind of factor.
That's what it is.
It's now you hit
hurry
it,
hurry before it's gone.
Yeah.
Just like the McRib.
It's you think the fall, they've got the date. It's August 29th is when they start selling these things, and people, it's a thing. Like, people are like, oh my gosh, it's available. You know, we can go ahead and get it. Just like something we had the McDonald's people in with, I mean, I got a chance to see some Hamburglar stuff. This is not stuff you see every day that's exciting. But like the McRib, you know, honestly, if I had to be honest from a, like, a food standpoint, it's a terrible sandwich.
It's not terrible, but it's not...
But people, it's back.
You know, you'll see that and hockey go together.
People want to get a McRib. Is it great? I don't know. You know, Shamrock Shake, it's the kind of thing that it comes out a certain time of year, and you got to get in on it.
Limited time only.
Yeah, that's it. That's
create
the sales
some
point.
Hype. Yep.
Dane Neal is here. We're trying to explain why pumpkin spice has altered everybody's lives. I don't get it. Wendy doesn't get it. But Dane's doing his best to explain. We'll take a quick break, and then more of this. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN. Still left. It's Wendy Snyder. Dane Neal is here, trying his best to explain to us why pumpkin spice is as popular as it is, because some of us don't get it.
Well, and some of the things that you like, Sriracha, right? Okay, it's one of the, it still stayed sort of in its, you know, hot sauce box. It didn't turn into, you know, like where, you know, you're trying to do almost everything with it. And now you look at some of these, I think the McDonald's guys are saying that they're doing, you know, pumpkin spice oil changes. You know, they're doing anything. You look at the list too, you've got, you know, not only chips, but things that go far beyond, you know, the kind of even that food realm, whether it's deodorant or, you know,
eggs,
air fresheners. They got eggs?
No,
because
you're gullible.
That would be interesting.
Yeah,
we have someone on the phone.
Oh, do we?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So hopefully it's Aaron Fox. He's a food scientist from Leahy IFP. They're, you know, one of the leaders in bringing flavors together, especially on the beverage side. Hey, Aaron, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Hey, Aaron. You know, welcome to Bill and Wendy, and obviously you know me, Dane. So a little bit of the thought process on the matching of flavors, because I know when Starbucks was looking at it, the pumpkin spice thing was like way down the line of things. They were looking at orange and cinnamon and caramel. Why do people kind of bring different different flavors together, and why do you think this one caught on so well?
You know, I mean, pumpkin spice is obviously, you know, long before my time, you know, you could say apple cinnamon or strawberry banana. But I can say that usually whenever, you know, people are experimenting with these flavors, they find two that complement each other. And when I say that, you know, it's easy to say, but usually what it means is that one sort of covers up or masks what the other imparts. So for, say, chocolate peanut butter could mask the bitterness of chocolate. Or strawberry banana, banana could cover or mask or reduce the amount of sourness from strawberries. You know, we're all used to strawberry flavored things that be very sweet and not so sour, but if you eat a strawberry, it's very sour. So, but getting back to the pumpkin spice, they seem to complement each other very well. And if you, you know, if you think about, you know, pumpkin pie on Thanksgiving or anything pumpkin you get, you know, it's kind of a comfort food. It's nostalgic. You get used to it growing up.
But a little goes a long way. Like, I like my pumpkin pie on Thanksgiving and maybe once or twice throughout the year. But having it, it can burn itself out.
Oh, yeah, that limited availability, just like the, you know, eggnog or McRib, you know, seasonal things that
right.
I personally love eggnog. I love it. But if I drink it all year round, I'd get real sick of it.
Now, well, here's the... Oh, Bill, you got a question?
Well, yeah, explain to us the effort, because food scientists are always trying to develop flavors that taste just like lime or blueberry or pomegranate. Why don't they just use lime or blueberry or pomegranate? Why are they trying to find an artificial version of those flavors? Is it just because of the cost?
That's an excellent question. You know, we get that a lot. You know, I guess the food industry has kind of been, you know, villainized by this, since it's under the assumption it's just for cost reduction to make it cheaper, make it a bigger profit, et cetera. However, I know even stuff that I work on, a lot of times if you're making a prepackaged food or prepared food that's going to, you know, made to last on the shelf or make it to the grocery store, you take it home, maybe a week or two later you eat it, you know, over the course of that shelf life, any agricultural product, whether it's blueberries or pumpkins or anything, it will degrade over time. So we have to compensate for that. Not just with flavors, but colors as well.
Why does a Jolly Rancher watermelon candy taste better than real watermelon?
That's brilliant.
You know, you have flavors that you could add that are true to fruit that, you know, are more like what the fruit actually tastes like, and then you can make something that is more appealing. What comes to mind, you know, the watermelon Jolly Ranchers, I'm not too familiar with. Yes, they do taste delicious, but say comes to mind is banana candy. You know, banana candy tastes nothing like what we know bananas taste like.
Right.
And I know more of the history of that is the fact that the bananas those were actually modeled after, the candy is, those are not available anymore. There's a disease that wiped them out in the 1950s, so we actually switched breeds of bananas because of that. And so now it tastes different from what we know banana candy to be.
All right, blue raspberry. There is not a blue raspberry. Why isn't it just raspberry? We have the hard-hitting questions yes. here, Aaron.
Hey, look at you, Diane Sawyer.
Blueberry and raspberry mixed together.
Wait, say that again, Aaron. I stepped on you. Why was the reason?
My understanding is that that's just blueberry and raspberry put together. I don't think there's a lot of science behind that one, but you know, we always see it with the blue ras, two Z's, and so it kind of seems like it's something different.
On the pumpkin spice thing, looking through history and some of the, you know, extensive research that I've done, there isn't even any pumpkin in it. And I know that you know, on the Starbucks side, you know, they take the word that really is like kind of the buzzword, right? This is like the star, right? The pumpkin, even though it's a minor ingredient in there. So when they actually added some pumpkin later, was that just to, you know, add some street cred? Because it really doesn't change the way that they want it to taste, right?
Well, I can't say for them specifically. I don't know, but I know in general it could add for street cred, as you say, but it could also make the flavor more well-rounded by adding that actual agricultural product such as pumpkin.
And the spices are nutmeg, cinnamon, and allspice. Are those your pumpkin spices?
You said cinnamon? Yes, all three of those.
Those are
my knowledge.
You got some ginger, you got some clove in there maybe, depending on what you want to do. Yeah.
Aaron, if you get Weiler's, you get... All right, so say I get lemonade, Weiler's lemonade. It says right on the package, artificial lemon. But if I get Lemon Pledge, it says real lemon.
So drink the pledge.
It's better to drink Lemon Pledge than Lemon Weiler's.
Hey, that is a great point, and I could talk to you about that all day. I'm going to try to summarize, but here's the thing, is everybody thinks of... I'm not sure you remember a while back, this is sort of a tangent here, but the Subway bread had the yoga mat material, or whatever they called it.
Yes.
And so it was viewed as bad, right? Because anything used in an industrial application couldn't possibly be good for food. So if you think about Pledge versus a Weiler's lemonade, lemons themselves and even oranges, some of the extracts from the peel can be used as solvents, as cleaning agents.
Oh, wow.
So I ask you if a material that's used in the manufacture of, say, yoga mats is used in bread, that's considered bad.
Yeah.
But if we use a food product as a cleaner or solvent in the industrial application, it's not bad.
Right.
So Bill,
why is that?
So take the Weiler's, put it in a spray bottle, start doing some housework with it.
Yeah, it's easy.
Sticky, but good.
Effective.
And yep. Aaron, we'd love to talk to you again. This was really interesting, and we can talk to you once the pumpkin spice phase has gone away. I have a new prediction, because this is the new flavor that's everywhere. Hmm. Mango this, mango that, mm-hmm. mango everything. And I like mango,
yeah,
but that was never a thing, now. And now it's in everything.
Wendy, that's the big mango lobby at work.
The mango tango. Aaron, ooh, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
Aaron Fox.
I want to talk to him once a week. I just love this stuff.
Yeah,
I am hard-hitting, aren't I, with my interviews?
You are Diane Sawyer.
You had a lot of questions in there.
Absolutely. Dane, you didn't solve anything. I still don't understand why this is so popular, but it is.
I think the thing that we should all be when it comes to pumpkin spice is just, in a word, suspicious.
That's the best way to be.
That's it.
Suspicious. When are you on next?
This Saturday, 2 p.m. We'll be there. We're going to be on the road talking all things on the road, some cars, some road trips, some travel. You bet.
Very nice. That's Dane Neal. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Oh, rubber ducky, you're the one. You make bedtime lots of fun. Rubber ducky, I'm awfully fond of you. Bobo, bo-dee-o.
Wendy,
ducky, joy of joy.
Bert and Ernie are gay.
All right. First of all,
they have announced that they are gay.
You can't. No, they haven't announced that.
And they bought a place in Michigan.
No.
And they want the world to know that they're happy, and that's the end of it.
Listen, I don't care if they're gay, but they're not gay. They're puppets.
This is the funniest controversy in the history of the world.
I agree with you.
It's been going on for decades. Bert and Ernie, the lovable characters on Sesame Street, there has always been undertones that people have said, hey, what's with Bert and Ernie living together? It's two guys living together in a place like that, sharing a room.
You know,
different beds.
You say there have been undertones. I never thought about it once.
I never did either until a couple of years ago. I read this long, long article of a guy set out to prove that Bert and Ernie are gay. Now, you should know this about Bert and Ernie. Here's a spoiler alert. They're puppets. They're not.
They're Muppets.
They're Muppets. They don't have lower halves.
Well, then they're not anything.
Bert and Ernie cut off at the stomach, at the belt line. There's no bottom half to Bert. There's no bottom half to Ernie.
Well, you've just ruined it.
Even if they did want to engage in some sort of activity, gay, straight, or otherwise, they would have a very difficult time doing it because they don't have any bottom halves. So there you have it. They're not, or maybe they are. We don't know.
Did you think the Odd Couple was gay? I mean, they got kicked out by their wives, but they live together. You don't know Bert and Ernie's backstory.
No. I don't. The difference, I think, is that Felix and Oscar had lower halves. They had better halves, their wives, and they kicked them out. But regardless of that, they had lower halves. Bert and Ernie, this is ridiculous. This has been going on for decades now. So a writer who used to write for their characters, a guy named Mark Saltzman, has explained that when writing for the characters, he always envisioned them as being gay. He himself, he said that a lot of the experiences that he and his partner shared, he then brought to the characters of Bert and Ernie. So that doesn't, it still doesn't mean that Bert and Ernie are gay, because let me once again remind everybody that they're made of material. They're not real people who don't have any kind of sexual proclivity whatsoever.
All right, but you could say that about cartoons, too. They're just drawn. They have no innards. Well, I guess Puppet doesn't either. Never mind. Scratch Puppet that.
Right.
But I never even thought of any kind of what they were doing during their off time. I just never did.
No.
I don't meet two people and go, oh, I wonder what their sex life is like.
Right.
I didn't even think of it.
Right.
Like,
right.
Wow, you're living with your best friend. Isn't that something you always wanted to do when you were growing up?
Yeah. Yes. But I think the fact that, here I am defending something that's impossible to defend. I think the fact that during the run of Sesame Street, like, Bert never met a girl. He was never at a mixer. He never met a girl somewhere. Ernie never said, hey, I can't. I know we had plans for Wednesday, but I have a thing. I met this girl. That never happened. You know, they were very ambiguous about that, right?
Well, they don't want to promote early. They don't want to promote dating to little kids.
Well, except that Bert and Ernie are of age. They're grown men.
Yeah, but they're dealing with other people. And then the kids would go, are they having premarital sex?
They would?
Yeah, because Gordon was married.
Gordon and Susan.
Right. So that, I don't think there
but
was.
But they were, Gordon and Susan were real.
And Mr. Yeah, that is the difference.
So that's the difference. And Mr. Hooper was real. And
did
Bob.
Oscar have a girlfriend? I seem to remember kind of grouch with lipstick on.
I think there was, yeah, I think for a while.
Snuffleupagus? And Big Bird, were they gay?
No.
How come? They had bottoms.
Right.
In your theory.
Right. No, that's true.
They had lower halves.
Yeah. Because I think a lot of your sexual urges in some way, shape, or form take place in your lower half, if done correctly. So once you don't have that, it's really hard to be that interested. I think. I could be wrong. I don't know. I just know that so much time has been spent on this argument, and it makes me laugh so hard because your average Sesame Street viewer is probably 4 years old and isn't wondering this, right? If you're four and you're watching Sesame Street.
Even when you're 10, you don't wonder that.
Right. I don't think so either.
I think it's just bad. I think we should just leave them alone.
Right. And let them live their life. I would applaud if the Children's Television Workshop said without any doubt, no, you know what? We've thought about it and they are gay. I would applaud them because it would say to kids, there's an option. There's an option for them, for Bert and Ernie.
That would
be
good
in this best friends
day and age to.
Right.
To bring that up and to show that a loving relationship isn't all about sex.
Right.
Unless it changed to that movie that Melissa McCarthy was in with the Muppets.
Oh, yeah.
And it had Bert and Ernie, getting busy, as they say.
All right. Let me give you, here's an example. All right. In Peanuts, we all know that Peppermint Patty was gay, don't we?
No.
You don't know that? I think she is.
Yes, she is. Was a tomboy.
Yeah. But there was obviously some relationship between her and Marcy. You know that.
They were friends.
I know they were friends, but they
I love
also,
when you get your serious
they enjoyed
voice
each
on.
Other's company quite
how do you
a bit.
Know? I never
they
saw just, them in action. I never saw them on a date.
Yeah.
Sharing a milkshake together with, two straws and one milkshake. I never saw them eat spaghetti like Lady and the Tramp, where one end was in one mouth and one was in the other. She was a little different.
I think the gay community has embraced Peppermint Patty.
Well, has she come out?
As representation. I don't think Charles Schulz ever formally said that she was gay, but I think it was inferred.
Why is he speaking for her?
Because he drew her.
Yeah, but she's her own person.
If you draw somebody, you get to speak for them. You don't think so?
I don't know.
You know how you speak for the Funky Phantom? Because you drew, for years you drew the Funky Phantom. It's that same principle. If you draw somebody, you get to speak for that person.
What about Velma? On Scooby-Doo.
You know.
No, I don't. I know what people speculate.
Yeah.
Who was her girlfriend?
They never showed her girlfriend because Velma was off fighting ghostly crimes all the time, finding people dressed as ghosts and stuff. She didn't have time. There wasn't enough time on the show to show Velma's girlfriend, but,
I think this is just speculative trash.
But I did it to prove a point. The same people that are adamant that Bert and Ernie are gay are also saying that Peppermint Patty or Velma are gay. And maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but the bottom line is they don't...
Don't say bottom line.
Well, Bert and Ernie don't have bottom lines. They stop at the stomach. There is no bottom line for Bert or for Ernie.
So what's the consensus? Are we just assuming?
The consensus is just that I love that people debate this. That makes me laugh so hard because they're cartoons or they're puppets or they're Muppets. Their sex life is non-existent for the most part.
I don't think about other people's sex lives. When I meet them, if I meet a couple, I don't go, boy, what are they doing this weekend?
How many times, though, have we had guests in? I know you'll deny this on the air, but I will swear by this. We'll have a male and female guest in, and when they leave, you go, I know they're doing it. You've done that so many times.
I'll admit that. I bet they are.
So that proves that you do speculate about their sex lives. You know those guys are doing it.
You know what? I speculate about people who aren't married to each other, because I assume people married to each other aren't doing it.
Right. Well, yeah. That's fair.
All right. I'll give you that.
Right.
But I don't question their sexuality. If
no.
two guys come in here, I don't go, boy, they're
right.
a couple.
Although there was one time, and I don't remember, boy, who was it? Somebody came in with their business partner, and they introduced themselves, and they said, and this is my partner, Richard. And you just gave me a look like, oh, interesting, like that. But he meant business partner. But he just
I don't
said,
I don't
just
know.
Said partner.
That I don't know. If I did, I don't know, because Jimmy Mack and his partner, Jason Swank, who does Rebel Force Radio, Jim always says, well, my partner, and I giggle at that, because I'm like, oh, that's cute.
Did you ever tell him that you
yeah.
think, oh, what did he say to
I
that?
Just say, oh, your partner.
Oh.
And then I call you my partner.
Yeah.
And there's nothing.
There's. Well, I have a lawyer looking at that right now.
All right, I'll change right. it.
We will take a quick break, and then we'll tell you about Woody Woodpecker.
Was he gay? Is that why his name is that?
I don't understand that. I have no idea what that means. We'll take a quick break and then explain things to me. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Hey, you know, we're going to be live in action on Friday. You can join WGN Radio's White Sox rally to kick off the Red Line series. We're going to be at Cork and Carry at the park, 3259 South Princeton, 3259. We're going to broadcast live starting with the Steve Cochran Show at 6 a.m., then the Biz Lunch with, no, then us.
Then us, right.
I forgot.
Yeah.
Yesterday I was so upset I left Steve Bertrand out of it.
He was upset.
Yeah, he was.
Made him angry.
So we're going to be broadcasting live then from 10 to noon, then the business, the Wintrust Business Lunch, and then John Williams for a little while, all the way up to the pregame show at 2:30 with Ed Farmer and DJ. We're going to talk to Ed Farmer. He's going to stop by. And come join us, Cork and Carry at the park in Bridgeport, Friday. All the details are at WGNradio.com/events. It's sponsored by Goose Island Beer Company and Virtue Cider.
I am so looking forward to it and another visit from Ed Farmer, because when I was growing up, that was one of my favorite baseball players. He was a relief pitcher for the White Sox for years. Played with a bunch of teams, but I knew him and loved him most as a White Sox player. And just to have a chance to talk to him always amazes me.
He's a great guy.
Yeah,
he really is. Ranker.com has put together a little list of characters that you probably didn't know were gay.
Hmm?
You never realized they're probably gay. Ren and Stimpy.
Mm-hmm.
A cat-dog duo, they not only lived together, they slept in the same bed.
Hmm. I hadn't really thought. Like you said,
I know.
I spend very little time thinking about it.
Harley Quinn?
Oh, from Batman, the Batman villain?
Yeah, cartoon version.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Have you thought of it?
I didn't, no.
SpongeBob SquarePants. He is friends with Sandy the Squirrel, although there's not a lot of flirting going on. And there are a lot of rainbows. That's the worst SpongeBob laugh ever. I don't think of him. I just think they're a bunch of friends hanging out.
I can't get past the lyric from the song, he lives in a pineapple under the sea. Like, that just that alone amazes me.
Yeah, because pineapples aren't under the sea.
Right.
Is that why it amazes you?
That's part of the reason, yeah. I don't know who his real estate agent is, but they really should have given him different options.
Velma's on this list from Scooby-Doo.
Velma. Well, of course, Velma is.
I don't know some of these. He-Man?
He-Man, Master of the Universe? I'm going to say everybody. Everybody on He-Man.
Really?
Yeah. Did you ever see it?
No.
Yeah.
All right.
It's like the movie Boys in the Band.
I haven't seen, I don't know if I saw
it's
that
the same
either.
Thing.
All right. Ursula from, yeah, from The Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
I just think she's mean.
Now, in all of these cases, this is just based on conjecture.
Yes.
This, like, nobody from Disney said, no, Ursula is
no, this is Ranker.com, which if you have, if you want a big time suck, that is Ranker.com. They really have some pretty funny lists.
Mm-hmm.
Elsa from Frozen.
There's been a lot of rumors as to that, and that in the sequel that could or should be addressed.
Good for her.
Well, she's not, I mean, again, they're not admitting it. They're just saying a lot of people think it.
Captain Hook?
That's interesting. That's
the stormy-tempered, child-hating Captain Hook.
Very close to Mr. Smee. Very close. It's interesting.
Of course, Smithers.
Well, but that,
oh, that
that's
has,
the first one that Matt Groening, who created The Simpsons, flat out said, oh, yeah, early on. Yeah, definitely. He's got a crush on Mr. Burns. He's always fantasizing about what if they were married, what if they were together.
Yeah, that's open. That's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey Mouse.
I had not heard that. What are they basing that on?
It comes as no
surprise.
That
he's been dating the same woman for 80 years and won't commit? The same mouse woman?
The Disney brand attracted an adoring gay fan base over the years. Much of this comes from their iconic mousy mascot, whose persona served as a gay emblem for many in the gay community.
Oh.
Aside from him, I have to be careful because sometimes there are swear words in this.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from him conforming to stereotypes about men with high-pitched voices and sweet, energetic dispositions, the name Mickey has historically found use as a gay code word since 1937.
Tell Mickey Mantle that and see what happens.
Yeah, I don't think so.
He probably won't answer.
He also came out in support of same-sex marriage when two women requested to get hitched at Japan's Disneyland Resort in 2012, but that doesn't mean he's gay.
The Disney company is the most gay-friendly company there is. So, yeah. So, yeah, I don't...
That's all
that's
I have.
Just based on conjecture.
I have other people that I've never heard of, so...
Yeah, the Simpsons have been really good about it, you know, about handling it very, very well and in a funny way. And I think Disney, at some point, wasn't there a character in the live version of Beauty and the Beast last year that they gave a line to where you said, oh, well, now that makes sense? I mean, Disney doesn't cover stuff up like
no.
that. They enjoy stuff like that.